Another week has gone by. We're back for episode number 366. That's right, 366. I had to double check. 366th installment, Parish of the Patriots. Glad you could join us this week. As a little turn of event, I normally record the show over the weekend, Saturday or Sunday. Today, I'm recording it on Monday, the day before the show actually airs. So we're a little more current. We're more on top of current events. If you do get something out of the show and you want to put something in the plate, that's always appreciated. We got the snail mail address. All you got to do is figure out how to address an envelope. If you don't know how, ask your grandma or grandpa. They will know how to address an envelope. It is always appreciated, and we always get a kick out of the listener supporter mailbag. However, there once again is no listener supporter mailbag this week because there's nothing in the plate. And that's okay, because that just means we can keep on trucking. Now, as you know, with this show, I don't do news articles on this show. That's kind of a daily nationalist thing or whatever. But I am going to make an exception just to give us a few points I wanted to make on a current story that's breaking this morning just as I am recording the show. And this is this ambulance arson attacks in London. And I'm not going to read this whole story. Like I said, I don't generally do news stories here, but I don't want to make a few points out of this before we move on to other topics. Because, you know, obviously, I'm always pointing out to people, even IRL, you know, they call them news stories. They're telling you a story. I was talking to somebody recently about the media. I said, you got to remember, what are they doing? When you look at the TV news and you're looking at these media people, these so-called journalists, these anchors on these shows, they're sitting there literally with a script. I said, what do you think those papers or the tablet is in front of them? I said, that's their script. You know, they're reading a script. Just as your favorite Hollywood star is not this character. You say, people, boy, I love this star. This is my favorite Hollywood star. And you ask them why that is. Generally, what you'll find is they're in love with a certain character that person played. You know, that's who they actually like. And they get it confused in their head. And this gets into, I think, the fact that your brain doesn't necessarily file things fictional, non-fictional, even though you know the difference between fiction and non-fiction. Your brain looks at video input, things that it's seeing on film, and, you know, categorizes that. And so, I mean, for instance, when you see Johnny Depp, you think of the pirate from Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, Jack Sparrow. That's who people like. It's an actor. They're playing a role. Your news people you see on your news shows are no different. They're actors. They're sitting there literally reading a script, just like an actor does. And of course, because they're reading a script, they're telling you a story. But even in the stories they're telling, you can look at things and say, hey, what about this? Why aren't they bringing this up? So with that being the big breaking story this morning, I thought I would we would touch on it again, make a little exception. I'm going to use an article from the Jerusalem Post. You know, that's a good solid source. Nobody can say you're picking and choosing your sources when you're using the Jerusalem Post. And the headline is, four Hatzola ambulances destroyed in London. Iran-aligned group claims responsibility. Now, this is why I looked up the story before talking about it. Because, like I say, this news story as I'm recording this just broke this morning when I saw it pop up that these ambulances were set in an arson attack. You know, first thing that popped in my mind was, hey, Rabbi, what you doing? You know, I mean, you see an arson attack and, you know, and before, you know, in before, oh my gosh, how can you say that? Lest us not forget when we had this spate years ago, you know, there was this rash of bomb threats against, you know, these, I believe it was different synagogues, you know, in New York and whatnot. And when the FBI got on the case and tracked it down, wound up it was a guy over in Israel. And the ADL left all of that on their hate crime anti-Semitic incident report. They didn't take them off and go, well, we're taking those off since those originated from Israel. So you got to understand, when I first heard this story, I thought, well, let's not jump to any conclusion. But apparently a group has claimed responsibility. How legit that is, I don't know. But we'll take that at face value and say, well, then that, you know, you can understand maybe how it would happen. I'm not sure why they would do this with ambulances. But anyway, I'm just going to read a few parts out of the story to make a few points and we'll move on from it. Four Hatzola ambulances in North London were set ablaze overnight in what British Prime Minister Keir Starmer called a deeply shocking anti-Semitic arson attack. You notice how they pick and choose these labels, you know. I mean, you just instantly, it's an anti-Semitic. It could be an anti-ambulance, an anti-ambulance attack. Maybe they got poor service. Oh, that's right. They didn't get service, which brings us to the first glaring point from this. So they have their own ambulance service, and I'm assuming this is just for them. This isn't for the Goyim. I'm assuming so. Let's think about that. So if you had a white people only ambulance service in London, would that be allowed? That's a rhetorical question because everybody knows the answer. I mean, imagine if you were in a car wreck and you're laying on the side of the road, badly injured, and you hear the sirens and you think, thank goodness an ambulance is on its way. And then the ambulance just blows past you because somebody in the Jewish community in London, you know, sprained their ankle or whatever. They just blow past you because it's not for you. It's a special, it's a chosen ambulance for the chosen people. I can't imagine. Well, I can. I mean, it's just they want us to believe their narrative of, you know, oh, well, the laws in these Western countries, you know, are designed to, you know, make sure everybody is treated 100% equal. We got to make sure that there's no preferential treatment going on. Everybody's treated the same. We are all about equality and whatnot. But a certain community gets to basically have their own private police because they have police too. I remember reading that sometime back. They, you know, private ambulance, private private fire department. And some animals, you know, kind of like Animal Farm, you know, some animals are more equal than other animals. Now, these four ambulances were arsoned, were set on fire. Nobody was in them. As far as I've not read anything where anybody was hurt in this. These were empty ambulances set on fire, which, I mean, you know, I'm not condoning, but I mean, they set a fire for, you know, unoccupied ambulances. You know, now if these ambulances had crew on board and patients, you know, it would put it in a different category because you would say, well, some people got harmed. So they chose to arson four empty ambulances. Again, don't get me wrong, and I'm not trying to play semantic games here, you know, and you know, not condone it. Well, actually, wink, wink, condoning. I'm not saying anybody should be setting things on fire. I'm pointing out that at the very least, they did set empty ambulances on fire. So four empty ambulances got set on fire. Let's see what kind of response the government in the UK did. The London Fire Brigade, going back to our article here, the London Fire Brigade, which sent 6 fire engines and 40 firefighters to the scene, said multiple cylinders on the vehicles exploded, causing windows to shatter in an adjacent apartment block. No injuries were reported. So 4 empty ambulances get set on fire, and the response is 6 fire engines and 40 firefighters for these empty ambulances. As I said, we jump back to the story. I'm just reading a few little parts here and there. I'm not going through a whole story. I don't have any interest in doing that on the show. But it says the newly formed Shiite terror group, and this is always kind of a red flag for me. Newly formed. Newly formed by whom? We were supposed to assume, oh, Iran formed this group out of the blue. Now, they've known some form of this war was, you know, talking about Iran, they've known some form of this war has been headed their way now for, you know, let's be honest, 40 some odd years since the revolution. They were obviously, they, you know, they, judging from their response here, they pretty well prepared for this confrontation. And out of any groups they support or have organized, they apparently left one out, so they quickly cobbled together. Because if you go through the whole article, and I'll send it to Sven, see if he'll link it up. If you go through the article, it's heavily implied like this is Iran somehow. You know, it was right here, the newly formed Shiite terror group, Ashab al-Yamin. Newly formed by whom? They want you to assume formed by Iran, but we don't know that. In fact, I would venture to say Iran's got their hands pretty full right now. I doubt they're sitting around organizing new groups. If they needed a new group, wouldn't they have formed that like a long time ago? Why would they need to form a new one? Oh, we left out the need. we left out the need for this group. Anyway, the newly formed Shiite terror group Ashab al-Yamin, in English, the Islamic Movement of the People of the Right, took to its Telegram channel to claim responsibility for the attack, which took place outside Matsaki Hadath Synagogue in Golders Green. My big question is formed by who? You know, okay. That would be really interesting if, I don't know, somebody looked into that. And of course, then our final thing I'm going to read from this, and then I'll leave it be. London's Metropolitan Police had confirmed the attack is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. There was nobody in the ambulances, so the ambulances were Semitic, I guess. By the way, well over 1,000 Iranians have, already been killed in the U.S. and Israel's attack on Iran. Nobody was harmed in these ambulances, but, my gosh, let's send out the brigades because these empty ambulances were set on fire. And this horrific anti-Semitism hate crime. The rest of the article goes into a bunch of, the usual posturing by the British government falling all over themselves, condemning this anti-Semitic hatred. They didn't condemn the U.S. for Tomahawk missiling a girls' school in Iran and killing a bunch of little kids. Well, the numbers seem to float around between 150 and 175 kids at this school. I haven't heard much condemnation coming from Keir Starmer and the government over that. These kids getting blown up by two strikes from Tomahawk missiles. But, four empty ambulances got lit up. And my gosh, you've got the whole government falling all over themselves to make sure they condemn this anti-Semitic, against these Semitic ambulances. I'm not sure how ambulances are Semitic, but I guess because these ambulances are only for the chosen, that makes it anti-Semitic because those are chosen ambulances or something. I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit skeptical. You got this brand new formed group that nobody's ever heard of. It just popped up. And it's possible it's completely organic. I know there's a lot of Muslims in London. So it's possible all of that is legit. I'm not saying, at all. But we're lied to constantly. I mean, come on. We're lied to constantly. So you have to take all of this with skepticism and say, okay, why is there now a brand new group? Like nobody saw any of this coming. Why would a brand new group need to be formed? And again, formed by who? They want to imply this was formed by Iran. I think Iran's hands are pretty full. Maybe if it is a legit group, maybe they did organically in the Muslim community there in London. You imported a bunch of Muslims and then you're going to stand by. And while the U.S. and Israel attack Iran unprovoked, that can cause problems. Maybe organically some Muslims got together and said, we're going to do jihad against empty ambulances or whatever. Could be, but newly formed by who? It's a relevant question. They would denounce relevant questions as, you know, crazy conspiracy theories. But it's a legit question because they don't answer it. They say this is a newly formed terror group, but they're not telling us who formed it. I mean, was it formed organically? Is that what they're saying? Are they, I read it as the implication is this is coming from Iran. But I don't see how this really benefits the Iranian government's position. In they're in the middle of a war. I you know, are they sending out orders? Go burn some empty. Make sure the ambulances are empty. Out of all the terror attacks you get in places like the UK, you know, and in various places of Europe and whatnot, and you think of all of the, you know, driving a truck through crowds of people or knife attacks and where people are actually hurt. I find it a little curious that, you know, in this one, it's empty ambulances, so nobody was actually harmed in any way, shape, or form. That's a good thing. I don't applaud people being hurt. It's just things that make you go, questions the media doesn't ask. And maybe it's 100% legit what they're telling us. Maybe this group sprung up from somewhere and decided to light off these empty ambulances. But are we, because it was being hyped this morning when I got up on the news, like, oh my gosh, this is just like this huge event. And I'm like, they're empty ambulances. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to keep on keeping on. Watching, I've been keeping up with a lot of coverage on the war. And because I have not grown tired of it. I know maybe some of y'all gotten fatigued hearing about it. But I just find certain aspects of it very interesting because of the way the big picture is playing out. And I also find it interesting in human nature and watching various people, you know, comment on these things and throw in their own two cents. And I was amazed to find that there are apparently still people out there doing the QAnon thing. I kid you not. Oh, he's a white hat. He's a black hat. I saw that as a comment. Somebody was critical of this ridiculous war thing that the Trump people. I mean, I don't know how anybody sits there and can, like, unless you're getting one of the checks, you know, obviously I did. I checked the P.O. box before I do the show. I always do, you know, see if there's anything in the listener supporter mailbag. And I looked in there and it was empty. And I was like, dang, you know, there's been some debate on whether Netanyahu's even alive. So I'm like trying to be patient because it's like, I didn't get my $7,000 check from Bibi Netanyahu, but, you know, he may not even be with us, or he may be in a coma, or maybe he's alive. I don't know. But, you know, they're kind of getting bombed. They got missiles being lobbed all over Israel and in Tel Aviv and, you know, lots of stuff getting blown up over there. So I'm trying to be patient. They got their hands full, but there was no $7,000 check. I was all ready to go. You got to go put that $7,000 check in the bank. And, you know, the bank teller would be like, you know, hey, oh, where did the, because they want to know, you know, if you put money in the bank, they'd be like asking, you know, where it came from, you know. But then they'd see, you know, who the check was drawn from. And they'd be like, hey, I need to, oh, never mind. We'll go. Do you want that in cash or do you just want to put it in your account? BB didn't send me the check, so we're gonna. No, but seriously, how does anybody defend this as a good move? You know, I mean, this was so poorly planned. You know, it went against advice of people who know better. And, you know, Trump, his announcements are getting more and more ridiculous every day. You know, he's declared victory like 18 times or something. I don't know how many times this guy has declared victory and that it's over, and then turns around and makes new threats if they continue to do something. It's like, well, how are they continuing to do something? You say that you've decimated them completely. They're utterly destroyed. The war is over. And then the next day, it's if you do this next thing, we're really going to decimate you or something. But anyway, I don't know how anyone thinks this is a good idea. You know, just on his face. And yet, once in a while, you'll still see somebody posting, you know, something along the lines of a comment being posted like, you know, you've got to trust the plan. Oh, this guy criticizing what Trump is doing? He's a black hat. I saw that one recently. Black hat. It's like, if you know, you know. There are still, it reminds me of once in a while, like if you're in a public place, like at the grocery store, or if you have to go to the airport or something, and there's still people, once in a while, you'll still see somebody walking around wearing the mask, like we're still doing COVID. That's what it reminds me of, that there are still people, and I put them pretty much in the same category. Like if I see somebody and, you know, they're still wearing a mask in 2026, it gives me the same inner reaction to that person as when I see somebody who's still doing QAnon in 2026. You don't understand the 5D chess, bro. You're not trusting the plan. You're going to look awful silly when the plan comes together. Speaking of Trump and his announcements, I was thinking the other day how much I miss 2016 Trump, you know? Because Trump was fun back then, and it's so different now that, you know, some people say this is a different guy. You know, that he's shorter and this is a whole nother Trump, like a body double or something. And you know, a little credence gets lent to that. I'm not saying I'm on board with it, but you know, I can see where people, you know, would start considering that because it's so different. Now, I'd say the difference is you remember when he ran the first time, it was, you know, I don't need their money. I'm funding my own campaign. And then this time when he got elected, it was, you know, thank you, Miriam Edelson, for all of the hundreds of millions of dollars you've given me so I can be president, allowing me to be president again. Once again, highlighting that these people are, you know, selected for these offices. But anyway, 2015, 2016 Trump, we all loved it because he would just say things, you know, and it's things that we could imagine ourselves saying. You know, he would call a reporter stupid that was obviously asking a stupid question. And it was hilarious. You know, I mean, the things Trump said back then, the people liked it because he just talked like he would just say stuff, you know, instead of being these ridiculous, every word has to be scripted. He would just say things off the cuff and they weren't, you know, it was things everybody was thinking, you know. It was things that would make you chuckle because it obviously the media felt uncomfortable. Everybody else thought it was funny. Same with his Twitter posts back then. You know, he would make those Twitter posts and it would just be, you know, hilarious. You know, instead of dancing around, he would call somebody just stupid or something, you know, and his tweets were like other people's tweets, you know, spelling errors and all. Now, you contrast that with current Trump, and it is. It's a whole different thing. He's making presidential announcements, because back then, Trump would tweet, and it would just be funny commentary on different stuff. Now, he's making, like, foreign policy pronouncements, and he's not even doing it on Twitter. He's doing it on this Truth Social, which is basically his personal platform, because I don't think anyone else is on Truth Social. Really, I mean, they say, oh, yeah, President Trump, because why would anybody be on Truth Social? The only reason anyone's on Truth Social is because Donald Trump is on Truth Social. I have to think when they say there's millions of people on there, well, of course, the media is going to be on there because they got to, you know, they want to look on there to see what, quote unquote, Trump is posting. But I don't think Trump is posting any of that stuff. When you compare it to like the 2015, 2016, you know, the first round of Trump tweeting. And, you know, how kind of humorous a lot of it was. Like I say, complete with grammatical errors. And now you have like this wall of text. You have these wall of text Truth Social posts with his profile, you know, Punisher Trump profile pic, which is cringe in and of itself. And this is what I'm getting to is the cringe. What was entertaining back then, you know, and humorous and people would chuckle at it. You know, the media would fall all over them and says, oh, he's being mean. And it's like, no, he's not. It's just funny. Now, it's like they're trying to recreate that and it's just cringe. Somebody's obviously writing this stuff. I don't think that's Trump. You get this wall of text and it always ends with that, thank you for your attention to this matter. What? We never saw that during the first Trump round. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Iran will be destroyed like never destroyed before. This huge wall of text. Somebody else is writing all that. And again, you know, grand foreign policy pronouncements being made on this stupid Truth Social. There's been a lot of cringe. And one of the really cringe things, and this was done in person. It wasn't on Truth Social for a change. And I'm sure you all have seen it by now. Where he's meeting with the Japanese prime minister and they're sitting there and going on and the reporter asks him, you know, well, why didn't you let your allies give him a heads up that you were going to attack Iran? And he's like, oh, we wanted it to be a surprise. And he looks at the prime minister of Japan and says, you know a thing about surprises or two. Why didn't you warn us about Pearl Harbor? And that was just cringe. You know, that wasn't the old Trump way. You know, first Trump wouldn't have done that. Because it was just cringe. You know, I mean, and the Japanese prime minister, obviously, it looks awkward. I watched the video and I felt awkward. It's like secondhand embarrassment, you know, when you're watching a character on a show and they're doing something and it just gives you secondhand embarrassment. It's not you. It's just a show. And you're like cringing. You're embarrassed that this person is behaving this way. And that's how it affected me. You know, I try not to be emotionally affected, but I thought, good night. How embarrassing and cringe is that? Why didn't you warn us about Pearl Harbor? It'd have been funny if she would have responded, because I wasn't born yet, and neither were you. What are you even talking about? It's just, you know... Where in the first Trump round, you know, it was refreshing to have somebody saying something, you know, instead of everything being filtered through 500 consultants and being written off by a committee before anything is said. It was refreshing having somebody just say the obvious. But that sort of this sort of thing, bringing up Pearl Harbor to the Japanese prime minister, you know, that's not refreshing. That's cringe. It's like where somebody's trying too hard, you know, they're trying to capture the magic, like the, you know, and it's just not happening. But then again, I guess I'm just not trusting the plan. The plan is to say cringe stuff to the Japanese prime minister, I guess. I'm not even sure what the, trust the plan. We have no idea what the hell the plan even is, but we should be totally trusting it. Obviously, with this Iran fiasco, there is no plan. That's why they're jumping from one thing to another. Their plan was, we're going to blow up their leadership, and turns out they had a high-ranking general in the IRGC, and they thought this guy would then be able to lead a coup. Unfortunately for them, they figured out that this guy was a Mossad plant. And my understanding is he basically got a bullet in the head. And so their big plan was, if they decapitate the leadership, they'll get their regime changed. This thing will last 2 or 3, maybe 4 days. It would be over. When that didn't work out, there is no plan B. Because we've gone, I think if there was, if you want to call this plan B, we're on about plan LMNOP right now, because they're just keep jumping from one thing to another. Only the QAnon people think there's any sort of plan here. I hate to tell you, there is no plan. Maybe something has happened to Netanyahu. I mean, I don't know. Apparently, he did have a press conference recently that wasn't obviously AI, supposedly, you know, because I was thinking when the, with them releasing the obvious AI Netanyahu videos, I'm like, maybe this guy really is dead or he's in a coma in the hospital or something. And I thought maybe that's why Trump is acting extra erratic, because there's nobody. The bot has malfunctioned because there's nobody giving orders. He's waiting for the orders from BB. And BB's not responding. BB. BB.exe is frozen up. It's not, the program is not responding, so the bot, the Trump bot, doesn't know what to do. There's no plan. You know, there's no plan to trust in. We're just winging it. We're winging it out here. Now, in the face of all of this, let me see, we have, of course, we talked last week about these Christian Zionist evangelical lunatics. And we were talking, you know, I was talking on last week's show. We were talking about, we were visiting about, you know, how I noticed that how so many of these people are the same people that like 10, 15 years ago were running the prosperity gospel scam. And now they're running the, you know, and I was talking to someone again about this, and you know, they were kind of perplexed about why these preachers think this, and I always just state the obvious: they're getting a check. I mean, I can't prove that, you know. People are, oh, you can't prove that, you threw that out there, you can't prove that. Well, you know, if I come home and my house has been broken into, do you have video of someone breaking in your house? You can't prove it. Well, it's pretty obvious. They're getting a check. I mean, that's, you know, when you eliminate the other possibilities, you come down to maybe they're getting a check. They're cashing a check. There's a reason these people are on TV. Do you think they would let me preach on TV? No. But these people are. There's a reason for it. But you have these evangelicals. We talked about it last week. Anyway, before I go straying off topic. And, you know, we were talking about these people. And in a lot of ways, it feels as though, you know, they're a, what do I want to say, almost like a straw man. They're like somebody to take the heat. You know, they're employees. They're not the ones writing the checks. You know, the Israel lobby writes checks. The evangelical Zionist lunatics, Christian Zionist lunatics, are not check writers. They're employees. And you could just again, casual observation. Donald Trump doesn't make speeches bragging about how much money they've given him, like he has praising Mary Madison, for example. How much money they've given him so that he gives Israel everything they want. He himself has bragged about this. So the, you know, it feels sometimes like these people are a prop to give someone something else to point to besides the Israel lobby. Oh, and you see this, you know. Well, he's beholden to his fanatical Christian Zionist supporters in the U.S. They're fellow employees. Now, I think some of their job here, their role in this event, and we're obviously an event. Their role in this event is to take some of the flack. They can't just have everybody talking about the Israel lobby. So this gives them something else to kind of point to. Yeah, but look over here. Play some whataboutism. What about those people, though? It's not just the Israel lobby. But we'll use this as a springboard to talk about something we've talked about before, but not necessarily from this angle. You know, maybe they just really support our so-called Judeo-Christian values. I mean, they trot that one out sometimes, our Judeo-Christian values. Now, most of the time when I see this brought up, it's brought up by Judeos, like Ben Shapiro type people, you know, talking about our Judeo-Christian values. And of course, you know how I feel about that. But obviously, there's people that think that's a thing. And, they don't understand the fundamental, and I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I at least understand some of the fundamental nature of Judaism as a religion, you know, as a practice religion. Because if you ask your average Christian in America, you know, what Judaism as a religion consists of, they would probably tell you something along the lines of, well, they basically use our Bible. They're following the Old Testament. You know, they just don't believe in the New Testament. And that's as far as our understanding of it goes. You know, like, see, we're so close. They go with the first part of the Bible, which is consists of what most of the book consists of, rather, is the Old Testament. And they follow the Old Testament. They just don't believe in the New Testament. And of course, that we all know that's fundamentally incorrect, but that's what a lot of people think. So that's how they sell them on this Judeo-Christian thing. They think, well, they're just like us. They just haven't figured out the New Testament part yet. They follow the Old Testament. Really. Because it seemed to me, if they're so devout on following the Old Testament, there's a lot of stuff that you're supposed to do in the Old Testament that they don't do. So how? That's not the nature. I'm talking about the nature of the faith. And I thought we'd put up some contrast between the nature between Judaism as a religion. We're talking about as a religion and Christianity. Because, again, there can be no Judeo-Christian. They're completely unrelated. Now, at its heart, Christianity, we're going to start talking about, you know, our faith. Christianity at its heart is not about violating God's laws. Some people erroneously try to portray it as that. There are false leaders, false teachers, false preachers, wolves in sheep's clothing, as Jesus warned us about, who do try to do that. They basically say anything goes in the world of sin, because once you say you believe in Jesus, you're off scot-free. But that's not what the faith is. That's a heresy. And our fundamental nature of our faith is that we seek to know God. We seek to learn and understand. We understand how little we truly know. We want to understand not just God says don't do this because, you know, just because he says so. We want to know why. We want to know where God is coming from. We want to understand the reasoning behind it so that we become closer to him. Because if we understand the reasoning, it will make sense to us and we will understand him more, which naturally causes us to grow closer to God. We don't dispel God's laws, which I always say, think of it as the natural order. I'm not talking about some Old Testament statue about sacrificing a sheep or something. I'm talking about fundamental laws, the natural law, the order of this creation he has made. We're not looking to overturn God's laws. We're looking, they're written on our hearts. Instead of trying to say, you know, look at a list of rules we need to follow, the rules are written on our hearts, so we kind of naturally follow them. Because we don't want to be in violation. And when we do, because we're faulty and sinful, you know, in our sinful nature, when we do, it strikes us immediately that we've come up short, that we've missed the mark. And we try to correct for that. And sometimes it's an agonizing process. It really is. It's a lot of work to be a believer. Because we are shackled in this life to this flesh, to the body, which holds us in this mortal realm, and thus it's corruptible. And so we deal with what's referred to in the Bible as our sinful nature. We're shackled to the sinful nature, which is a handicap in the wrong direction. It's an extra burden. But that, you know, it's like training with, like if you're a runner and you're training with ankle weights on, the idea is when we leave this world, you take the ankle weights off and you got this made. We're shackled to this flesh. And so we're striving, you know, we're training extra hard because we're drugged down by this other nature, this weakness, this thorn, as Paul called it. We sin and we strive to overcome it, which is what repentance is. Not simply saying, oh, I'm sorry, and going on about it. It's recognizing of coming up short and over, no matter how many times it takes, we strive to overcome it, to not do that again. And our quest in this is that eventually we'll know more as we go. We learn more and more about the Lord and grow closer and closer to Him through our own life experiences. You know, you'll see something, you know, if you're dealing with something with your children, and you'll stop and think how, you know, God in a sense deals with the same sort of thing with us. It's about growing closer to God and understanding Him. Judaism, on the other hand, when you look at it as a religion, it from what I see, it fundamentally consists of trying to get one over on God via a technicality. You know, one of the more, one of the aspects of this is a lot of y'all may be familiar with is, you know, they have these certain days when they're not supposed to leave their house, you know. And they say, oh, well, this is this certain holy day, and or these 2 days, this weekend or whatever is a holy day, and we're not supposed to leave our house. And so their answer is to take a string or a piece of rope and string it around the whole neighborhood or whatever on telephone poles. And then they go outside. They leave their house, even though they claim that God doesn't want them to leave their house. And if you say, well, I thought you weren't supposed to leave your house. They said, well, you see those that string going around here? That's my house. See, the walls of my house are my house. Who's to say that the string can't be my house? And if I say the string running around these power poles, these telephone poles or whatever, if I say the string constitutes the perimeter of my house, then it constitutes the perimeter of my house. And as long as I stay within the confines of the string, I haven't violated God's laws. I've kept the holy day here. It's a ridiculous attempt at technicality. And that's really the more you look at it, it's like this is the fundamental nature. I'm not claiming to be an expert or know everything about Judaism as a religion. But when you look at things like this, like that, just that example, and it's a thing, so we can, you know, I'm not just making it up. As Christian believers, that would never even cross my mind. Would it yours? You know? Let's figure out some technicality to violate what Jesus said we should do, and so that we can get away with it. But then if God brings it up later, we could just say, oh, well, technically you can't do that to me because technically I didn't. You see, I've got you on a technicality. It's not about being closer to God. It's about being smarter than God. You know, you don't try to trip up your family member or someone you're close to with a technicality. You try to trip up an adversary with your technicality. You know, you sin and do whatever you want, but then as long as you read this message, you read out of this book while you're slinging a chicken over your head, your sins go into the chicken. And the chicken goes to hell. Now, look, I know that there's different sects of Judaism, just like there's different sects of Christianity. I strive to be fair. But just to have that mindset, you're going to sling your sins into a chicken and technically see God will be tricked. It seems to me the fundamental nature of it as a religion is all about tricking God, being smarter than God, catching God on a technicality so you do what you want to do and God can't do a damn thing about it because you used his own words against him. And you see it a lot of times playing out here in this world, you know, where I call them word spells, these different word games, you know. Oh, well, this doesn't mean this. This technically means this. And it's just a constant thing. You know, they're launching an example of this word game. The UK, and this doesn't have anything to do with the topic at hand. It's just an example of what I mean by this word game nonsense. This is word spells or whatever you want to call it. You know, originally the UK said they wouldn't let the US use their bases. Well, then they said they could use their base in Diego Garcia. And they said, well, we're going to let the US launch strikes against Iran from our base, but only defensive strikes. The US and Israel attacked Iran, not the other way around. I don't see how any strikes done by the U.S. are going to be defensive in nature, because the whole war is offensive from that standpoint, from the U.S. and Israel standpoint. It is an offensive war. There's no other way to frame it. The U.S. is on the other side of the planet, and they attack this country over here. How do you say, you know, but see, that's what I'm saying. These are just word games. We'll allow the U.S. to use our base for defensive strikes against a country the U.S. attacked and continues to attack. There's what I mean by word games. And try to cast a word spell. Try to trick everybody. If we say it is so, it is so. And it seems to be what aspects I have seen and read about and understand about Judaism as a religion. You know, that seems to be one of the defining factors of the original of the religion is tripping up God somehow. Not just following a rule book, and it's not Old Testament stuff. This is something else. It's about being able to be smarter. Outsmarting God, catching him on a technicality, using his own words against him so that he's unable to exact judgment against you. The point here being is don't come at me with no Judeo-Christian nonsense, because it's just fundamentally different religion. I mean, fundamentally different. As we move on, we look around at the world. And one thing about all of this, if we just look at things in its entirety. And from the Epstein stuff to the just all of it. And that is the evil and the wickedness has become so manifest, so obvious, that nobody can honestly say, I didn't know. You know? I mean, it's just in your face. You know, who can look at this stuff and say, well, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't know this was going on. I mean, it's everywhere. Everywhere you look. In all these various forms, the rebellion, the sin, the destruction of society, the degeneracy of society, the acts of governments, policies they place, they're putting down, the things they're doing to the people, no matter how harmful they are to the people. You know, the stuff, the character of those who rule over us, and I'm just talking about the figurehead politicians that are placed over us. It's one big, ugly picture of degeneracy. It's in your face. You have to just be living under a rock to not see it. So nobody can say, we didn't know. And then it becomes incumbent to do everything we can not to be a part of it. I really, you know, you come back to people will ask the question, yeah, but what do we do? What do we do? And, you know, and my answer is plainly to come up out of them, as it says in the Bible, you don't participate. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. You have to do certain things. You know, I always use the example of, you know, I pay my taxes, not because I support what they're doing, but because they will kill me. I've used the illustration before of, no, I did not loan that man my car, with which he then took and robbed a bank. The man pointed a gun in my face and said he would blow my brains out if I did not hand him the keys, and then he took my car. That is, I pay taxes in that regard, Not because, wow, I really support everything the U.S. government does. No, I pay my taxes because if I do not, they could potentially send somebody and put a gun in my face and blow my brains out because I didn't pay my taxes. The distinction matters. It matters in your own mind because you're not guilty. You know, nobody would think it was correct or just if that situation with the car thieving happened and the person stole your car at gunpoint and robbed a bank. And then if you heard that the police, when then knowing the situation, came and arrested you and threw you in jail because you were a participant in the bank robbery, you provided the car. You'd say that's not right. That person didn't participate in anything. They got their car stolen. They were a victim too. There's a big difference. I don't participate. Back when this last election happened, and you know, I'm in Texas, so needless to say, you know, got a lot of Trump supporters here. And at the time, when I'd get asked by people, you know, you're going to go out and vote, ain't you? You're going to vote for Trump, right? And I'd tell them, I'm not voting. And they would be like, taken aback. They were a little put off by the idea that I'm not participating in the system. I'm not signing off on it. I'm not acknowledging it. Does my vote matter? Absolutely not. Whether I vote or not doesn't affect anything, you know, in the material sense, you know, in the immediate materialistic sense. It doesn't matter one way or the other. But it matters to me on a spiritual sense because I have no ownership of this. Now you have any with this war insanity and all the Epstein stuff and all of the rest of it. You got a lot of people that voted for Trump that are now regretting it. And they're writing public commentaries and opinion pieces saying, I voted for this guy and I really regret it now. They regret it. Why? Because they feel they have ownership in it because they participated in the system. You do. When you're voting, you're basically lending your agreement to the system. You know, I mean, your intentions may be good. I'm not trying to condemn everybody that votes. You make your own decision. But you are lending a certain agreement, if that makes any sense. When you, with your vote, you're saying the system serves you on some level or another, that it functions as advertised. I used to vote. Well, but once I realized the ridiculousness of all of it, I mean, I'm late in autumn. I'm late autumn in life now. And I've seen a whole lot of elections come and go. And a whole lot of people get voted in that were really going to change things. It was really going to make a difference this time. You know, I'm old enough now that now when I read about people calling about voting these bums out and replacing them with new bums, vote these people out and put some people in there that'll change the system. I remember when the people they're talking about, voting out now were the ones being voted in to replace the last bums. You know, Ted Cruz is a prime example. He was the Tea Party candidate. He was elected to we're putting Ted Cruz in. He's going to change the system. He was the Tea Party candidate to upend the system and change it. And how has that worked out? Now he's one of the ones people that we got to vote this bum out. It's like, you voted the last bum out and put this bum in. You know, Tel Aviv Ted or whatever you want to call him. I mean, every chance he gets, he can't wait to gush about how much he supports Israel. Doesn't make any difference. I mean, at some point in time, you got to just say that the system doesn't do what they tell us it does and quit participating in it. It's liberating for your soul, for your mental health. And look, it's not like I'm the only one who's seen this to be the case. And I'll see other people writing articles or making videos or whatever saying the same thing. And you'll have somebody show up and say, oh, you're just trying to convince people not to do anything. Okay, what do you think people should be doing? You know, I mean, spell it out for us. Oh, they don't want to do that. Those people never want to spell it out for you. They want to see you when no one's going to do, you're not going to do shit. That's what they say. You're not going to do anything. You're a bunch of cowards. You're not going to do anything. Okay, well, if it's so important, you do it. Why aren't you doing it? Why are you sitting here trying to goad random people you don't know on the internet into quote-unquote doing something? If it's so important and this is what's going to change the world, why aren't your happy ass out there doing it? You know, they're never out there doing it. They're chiding people they don't know on the internet for not doing anything. I was telling somebody recently that, you're not going to see the system collapse because somebody takes up, like, you know, they all grab up their guns and march on Washington. That's not going to happen. What you're going to see is the system collapse due to non-participation. You know, the aircraft carrier, the Gerald Ford aircraft carrier, is now out of the Iranian theater. Why? Because basically the sailors on the ship stuffed the toilets full of rags and set the laundry room on fire. They don't want to participate. The Iranians didn't take the ship out, and I was skeptical. You know, when I read the laundry room story, I'm like, yeah, right, they got hit by a drone or some shit. But apparently, no, apparently that's not the case. So you have this aircraft carrier and its entire group is taken out of the theater, not by Iranian missiles, but because the people on the ship don't want to comply. They don't want to participate. Whether that's because they think this war is morally wrong, or because they're just sick of being deployed forever, especially on behest of a foreign country the size of New Jersey that somehow wields what appears to be absolute and total control of the U.S. government. They want to participate, so they're not participating. You see, that's how it breaks down. Non-participation. So what I do for me personally is I try my best not to participate. Again, you'll have people that try to define this as don't go out and pay your taxes. Don't pay your income tax. We got our income tax deadline is coming up here in the U.S. and they're telling people, don't go pay your taxes. I would be willing to bet that most of those people are going to pay their taxes. They want you to not do it. It's this mindset of they'll sit back, and if they look around and everybody isn't doing it, then they will do it. You know, don't participate. You know, it's not saying don't pay your taxes. Yeah, you can not pay your taxes. That's up to you. But don't be surprised when they come take all your shit and maybe even throw you in jail. You know, if you make a mistake on your taxes and you owe money, they'll work with you, you know, because they just want the money. But if you just blatantly don't pay because you're like, I'm not paying. You know, I'm not paying for your trips to Epstein Island and your latest wars for Israel. I'm just not paying. They will come put you in a cage, take all your shit. And if you resist in any sort of way, shape, or fashion, or maybe even if you don't, because they're going to be the ones saying what happened, they can shoot you. And if you want to make that call, that's all on you. I'm honest and upfront. I pay mine because I don't want to get put in jail or get shot. They stole my car. I'm not loaning it to them. They're not my friend. It's the difference between a woman falling in love and being raped. I mean, there's definitely a night and day. A night and day difference. I do believe we are going to see more noncompliance. You know, I've been saying this for a minute. I've been saying that, you know, there are little people will not comply in ways that they can get away with. And, you know, again, going back to the aircraft carrier example, you know, you shove a T-shirt down the toilet. You know, they don't know who did that. There's no way to track down who did that. You know, you set a fire in the laundry room. It's telling to me not that so much that somebody did that. It's the fact that you got a ship with thousands of people on it and no one's saying who did it. Which kind of tells you that everybody's kind of on the same page here. Noncompliance. They don't want to go. They don't want to go fight for Israel. They don't want to go put their lives on the line for Israel. The system collapses because people will find a way. people aren't going to do something that's going to get them shot in the face or drug off and thrown in jail. But they will do stuff that they can get away with. And it may not sound like much, but collectively, when you have millions of people that are doing everything they can do, you know, everything they can and get away with, it starts crumbling because you have so much noncompliance and it builds. You know, people non-comply in this area and then it grows and then they're non-complying over here. And then there's, you know, non-compliance begets more non-compliance and it starts building. And as more people are not complying, you know, the people gain courage and more people are not compliant. This is the way the system collapses inevitably. And I think that's what we're headed for. I don't know when. I couldn't give you a time frame. I wouldn't even venture, but I can see that trend. And I think that's eventually where all of this winds up. So, you know, and then, of course, that brings in the question, what next? And we don't know. I've held the view for some years now that we eventually look at the United States as a united, quote unquote, entity, basically breaking off into separate pieces, which I think is a positive development because it alleviates a lot of stuff. You know, if you broke, say, Texas and part of Oklahoma broke off and became a separate country, is it really worth the Israel lobby spending millions and millions of dollars to, you know, get the Texas government? Because it's not big enough to do anything. Texas isn't going to go over and launch a war against Iran. You know, it gets rid of a lot of the problems that we're seeing, you know, right now in as showcased by the U.S. government. But anyway, we're out of time. We need to wrap it up on that note. I appreciate you stopping by. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. And as I always hope we'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.